Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
For word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott.
Speaking of a chafing dish, that must be my dear friend and neighbor, Mary Ellen McGillicuddy.
In the 1990s, Brinny Maxwell became a household name, at least in Manhattan, where the show dominated public access cable airwaves. The character was the alter ego of Ben Sander, a prototypical pre-feminist 1960s homemaker in drag. The show was emblematic of the gay counterculture media at the end of the 20th century. Later, 2003 brought a whole new brand of gay TV to the air.
All right, guys, we have Jeff Berman. He's a gay man trapped in a very straight world.
But wait a minute, Ted, what do you mean straight world?
Well, he's a gay guy who lives with four straight guys.
And look, yikes.
Look on your BlackBerry. I don't know which one is Jeff.
Okay, the one with the handlebar mustache definitely looks gay.
But I think that's just to throw us off.
Bravo's hit Queer Eye for the Straight Guy launched the trend of mainstreaming gay culture into pop culture. In 2005, Viacom launched Logo. That's a LGBT-focused channel that until recently featured gays and lesbians at the heart of its programming, with shows like RuPaul's Drag Race and the Big Gay Sketch Show. Logo's most recent programming, however, is different, a shift which Ad Age reporter Thomas Partey finds emblematic of a disappearing gay niche in media. He wrote about Logo's new lineup and the reaction to it for Ad Age, and we welcome Thomas Partey to Word of Mouth with more. Thomas, thanks for being here.
No problem. How are you?
I'm very well. So what is in the Logo Network's new lineup?
Well, it's interesting. One of the big new ones is called Eden Woods World, which, you know, has one of those six-year-olds from the Toddlers and Tiaras show that everyone watches.
Right.
There's also a show called Scandalicious, which I think is going to be like one of those trashy countdown shows, like Best Week Ever. And then even, I kid you not, Design My Dog, which is like a reality competition show for dogs. I think there might be some risk in mistaking that for RuPaul's Drag Race. I think that's the joke going around right now.
Well, it sounds like any other cable network, right? I mean, how does Logo explain the reason behind these new shows? What's their goal?
Well, you know, I spoke with Lisa Sherman, who is Logo's general manager, and you know, she told me that this is a completely reactionary decision, and it's based on what's relevant to the audience increasingly. You know, as the story goes, gay people are more accepted and more visible in mainstream media, and in increasingly complex ways, I would say. They're less interested in sort of an insular little cable TV world that belongs to them. And, you know, we know that Logo doesn't make decisions lightly. It focus groups everything it does. So I have to assume that there's at least some validity to that explanation. But, you know, they also have this study coming out next month that they've commissioned with, a media agency, and that's going to take a nice good look at their audience and what it wants to see and how it lives, you know, how viewers live their lives. And actually, interestingly, one of the early statistics from that study is that more than half of gay viewers don't actually consider a gay central character as a necessity to them anymore. Mm. And I think that's really, really surprising and really telling.
Yeah, so out of the gay ghetto, you know, you're no longer making TV just for a certain segment of the audience. You no longer need to have a hero, an identifier, I guess.
Well, that's the narrative. I mean, whether we accept that, I guess we'll have to see. I personally have a little of an issue with it, but, you know, I'm not alone in that. But, you know, I also think there's some truth to it.
Well, let's just listen to, you know, what's on mainstream TV. Portraying gay culture on TV has become pretty much normalized. Here's a clip from the top-rated ABC show Modern Family, which features a gay couple, Mitch and Cameron, as two central characters.
It was a supportive wah-wah. I was trying to save the moment.
There's no such thing as a supportive wah-wah. A wah-wah, by its very nature, is vicious and undercutting.
Well, I was just trying to salvage that story, okay? I told you not to tell it. You told it, and it died.
It did not die. It's a thinker.
And the only thing people were thinking was, thank God the story's over.
So, committed gay couple, center of a popular TV show, so out of the gay ghetto, is there still a need for targeted gay programming, Thomas Partey?
Well, you know, some say yes and, you know, others say no, but let me just say that I think Modern Family is doing a brilliant job. I think the dynamic of Mitch and Cam is so relatable, whether you're in a gay or straight couple. And I know I myself find, you know, I can see myself in my relationship in Cam and Mitchell. But, you know, not all the shows are doing this. ABC also has a show called Happy Endings, and they have got a gay character named Max who is kind of the opposite. He's very straight and, you know, he's kind of a schlub, and he, you know, there's the occasional reference to his relationships, but it's all very heteronormative. And, you know, that doesn't sit right with me. And you know, maybe some gay people are like Max, but I think more of us would look at that and kind of see a network that's taking all the gay out of a gay character to try and make him relatable to the audience. I think that's actually such a really a flattering foil to what Modern Family is doing. I mean, I don't know that it does, really signal a lack of a need for gay targeting. I don't think it does, no.
Well, who would advocate for a need?
There's quite a growing segment out there of gay people who aren't really seeing themselves on mainstream TV, and you know, they tend to be a little older, and they tend to be a little less kind of gentrified. And I hate to use that word in mm-hmm. such a strange context, but they seem to be a little less aligning with the political movement or the political trends lately, which are all about, you know, we want to be the same, we want to be just like you, we want you to see us the same way. And I think those people might want content that's a little bit more tailored to them.
We're talking about the mainstreaming of gay culture on TV and other media, and whether that means there's no longer a place for programming targeted to LGBT, lesbian, gay, bi, transgendered audiences. Our guest is Thomas Pardee, who wrote about Logo TV. That's a new LGBT, or fairly new, network, and the inclusion of kind of straight shows in its new lineup. He wrote about this for Ad Age magazine. We have a link to that, including a trailer for Eden's Woods World, at wordofmouthradio.org. Well, let's talk a little bit about print. Now, this was one of the earliest forms, I guess, of a lot of gay media, publications like Out and The Advocate. I mean, you can really get plenty of gay news now in the New York Times or on the Huffington Post or on Gawker. Is there a need for these magazines?
Well, I think the money speaks for itself, you know, and according to the numbers for the past year, ad dollars in gay print are up. I think, you know, more than $300 million was spent on advertising in gay media in 2011. And a lot of that is in like sort of more local publications. Out and The Advocate are, I would say they're struggling with the same problems that all print magazines are struggling with. But I don't think any of that is because they don't have an angle that's all their own. I think they absolutely do. And in fact, actually, I spoke with Out's editor, Aaron Hicklin, two weeks ago. And he talked a lot about kind of the gay prism and how some stories are just the best told when they're told specifically for gay people. And I think he's right. And I think as far as like the Huffington Post, I mean, they probably get the bulk of their content from reblogging gay media anyway.
Mm. Actually, it seems that Logo shut down some of its gay-focused news blogs, but there are some other new media ventures like Fabulous that you write about that didn't do so well. Tell us about Fabulous.
Well, Fabulous was launched, I believe, in 2010, and it was initially supposed to be sort of the Facebook kind of Groupon, Hotels.com, aimed at gay people. It was, you know, based on the premise that, you know, gays want to react with each other, interact with each other, and they want to, you know, share information that's relevant to them. And they had some early investors, and that venture, it just wasn't gaining the right traction, and they weren't able to kind of fulfill the promises they were making to their investors. So they pivoted pretty dramatically about less than a year, actually, after they found it, and they dropped the gay angle altogether, and they went with just they're just design deals now. It's kind of like more of a Groupon, but it's a very sleek-looking website, but there's no reference or mention of its kind of gay origins anymore. And since then, they've taken off dramatically. You know, I think they're on track to do $100 million in revenue this year.
So if gay culture, obviously profit motive is behind that kind of a switch, right?
But I would say so.
If we're looking at gay culture disappearing as a kind of separatist culture in the media, you know, being more integrationist. How about in real life? How about in real life gay culture, which media is supposed to reflect?
Well, you know, I think it's kind of hard to quantify, but I think it has to do with age. And I think many of the millennial generation, you know, we're familiar with them, you know, and they're kind of in their teens and 20s right about now. And they grew up during this gentrification period that I mentioned. You know, mm-hmm. they're driving this trend. And it makes sense, you know, as we know, unlike Gen X, which was all about rebellion and kind of the counterculture, this is a generation that historically has always gotten what it wanted just by asking for it and just by playing by the rules. So this is the narrative, right? So it all kind of flushes really well. And as we know, this is also a generation that's a big target for marketers. They're the digital natives, and they're dictating the conversation, and, you know, they're determining how a lot of media money is spent right now.
All right, you've done a lot of writing about the millennials, the role that they're playing in these trends especially. But there seems to be this trend of gay millennials want to fit in while standing out. So I guess that's the whole question. You know, are we getting to the same place that other cultures have come to, integrationist versus separatist in some kind of way? Is that debate going on inside of gay culture in an active way?
I think so. I think gay people, it's not that they're afraid or that they don't want to be recognized for being gay. I think they want to be seen as more than that. The conversation needs to be a little bit more multifaceted than just, you know, showing them a rainbow flag and expecting them to identify with that. You know, I mean, even within the LGBT acronym, there's so much diversity, and you can't reach one letter, you know, or all letters. You can't reach two letters at the same time with the same message, practically. So I think there is a certain amount of that going on. Yes.
Well, you mentioned some of the shows that have been embraced by the gay community on mainstream TV, those coveting ad dollars, like The Real Housewives. I think you wrote about that in your article. Any other mainstream shows that have caught on that perhaps we haven't heard about?
Oh, of course, of course. I mean, I think pretty much everything on HDTV, HGTV, I should say. I'm not sure if you've watched that show, but that show's like crack. So, you know, even the really soapy stuff that's always done really well with gay audiences, like Revenge on ABC, which is fantastic. So soapy. I'm a big fan of Downton Abbey, but I think the whole world is a big fan of Downton Abbey at this point.
Which has actually turned into a soap opera with better costumes, I suppose.
I guess you're right. And also just better writing. You know, it's a lot more fun to watch. And, you know, as an audience member, it's really rewarding. And I think gays identify with the plot turns and the characterization and all that. So there's a lot going on in the mainstream media landscape. And I think I'm really hoping that Logo's content shift and, you know, content shifts of other gay media properties, that they do keep their core audiences at heart. I know that was part of the concern for Absolute when I spoke with them about the shift. They really wanted to make sure that as Logo does change its approach to this, that they do keep gays at the heart of their programming, at least in some way. And I think the risk, you know, from an audience perspective, is that there's going to be this slippery slope, right? That this is just the first step in a, you know, on the long road to Bravo. And I hope that we're not on that road, but I guess time will tell.
Well, Thomas Pardee, I really want to thank you for opening up the issue for us, and thanks for joining us today.
Of course, my pleasure.
Thomas Pardee, reporter at Ad Age. You can find a link to his article, Is Gay Too Mainstream for Its Own Media, at wordofmouthradio.org.